This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. What is in our water? Our next-door neighbors in Iowa have been dealing with a growing water problem over the past few decades. Thousands of wells across the state have been found to be contaminated with nitrates, the chemical compounds that are a common ingredient in fertilizer. And farmers across the country use billions of pounds of fertilizer. A lot of that goes into the ground right here in the Midwest, and often those products can run off the fields and the land they're used on into ditches and streams, eventually ending up in the water we use for drinking, fishing, and otherwise sustaining life. There are several major questions this raises. What to do about it is one. Who's responsible for it is another. Chris Jones places the blame on the agriculture industry. He recently retired from being a research engineer at the University of Iowa. Now he's put out a book detailing his research and his thoughts on the ongoing problem and the ramifications of it in Iowa and beyond. It's called The Swine Republic: Struggles with the Truth About Agriculture and Water Quality. It's out now from Ice Cube Press. He'll also be part of an event tonight at the Orpheum in downtown Champaign, if you happen to be in central Illinois. It's the launch event for what the Prairie Rivers Network calls its Clean Water Forever campaign. That'll be from 7 to 8:30 this evening, again, at the Orpheum in Champaign. Chris Jones joins us now in studio. Chris, welcome to the 21st Show. Thank you for being with us.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Listeners, you can join our conversation today as ever at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, so as we talk about water pollution, let's start with how people are seeing this manifest. You write about some fishing trips that have gone bad. Can you talk about what you've experienced and how you've experienced this pollution firsthand?
Well, I think every person in Iowa has experienced it firsthand. And yes, I'm an angler and I like fishing, but you know, you don't have to fish to see this. And if you go out to one of our lakes, quite often in the summertime, they're green or they're covered with algae and they're unusable for recreation. We oftentimes see the beaches posted at our public lakes that's unsafe for swimming because of E. coli or algal toxins, the microcystins. This is a constant issue for drinking water in Iowa. We have about 7,000 private wells that have been contaminated with nitrate above the safe limit of 10 parts per million. About 25% of the public water supplies in Iowa, those are people that are drinking water from a municipal supply. About 25% of our citizens are drinking water that's been treated for nitrate removal. And so this is a huge issue for our state and is really a quality of life issue for people, especially that aren't involved with agriculture.
Okay, so from a scientific standpoint, and I'm going to say here, sometimes I do say, like, explain this to me like I'm a smart 13-year-old, because I know you can get a lot more technical than maybe I'm capable of following. But talk a little bit about why we're seeing what we're seeing in our water. How does this actually work?
Well, you know, I write my book for general audiences, and so I try to explain things in ways that general audiences can understand them. And so in the corn-soy system, we use a lot of nitrogen fertilizer on corn especially. It's not really applied as nitrate or not usually applied as nitrate. It's often applied as anhydrous ammonia or some other products. And then microorganisms in the soil convert that form of nitrogen into nitrate. Nitrate is really highly soluble. And so as rainwater infiltrates the soil profile, it dissolves the nitrate. And it takes it down to the tile systems. And a lot of people don't really realize how much of the Midwest is tiled. These are networks of porous pipes that are about 4 feet down that lower the water table and dry the soil out and optimize conditions for corn and soybean production. These tiles discharge to the stream network, and the tiles are the primary delivery mechanism from farm fields to the stream network. And so we see here where we're at in central Illinois, where I'm sitting now, you know, the land is flat. And so a lot of this land is tiled just like it is in Iowa.
That's interesting. So, I mean, and you're hinting it, I mean, one of the reasons we're seeing what we're seeing now is because of decisions made more than a century ago. Can you talk about that history and what maybe people who are not farm people may not understand about how we have shaped our landscape to lead us to this point?
So that's right. Some of these consequences do link back to decisions made a century ago. And so when Europeans got to Illinois and to Iowa, these areas were very wet. And so we had thousands, if not millions, of these wetlands in Iowa. And there also were many wetlands in the Eastern Corn Belt over here. And so to farm these soils, we had to dry them out. And in Iowa, I believe we had about 8 million acres of wetlands. Well, those are all gone. There's less than 0.1% of our wetlands are left. It's a similar situation over here. And so we made the decision over a century ago that we were going to farm this land. Since that time, we've continued to upgrade the tiling systems, and diversity on our farms has been reduced. We used to grow things like oats and wheat and barley and have some hay and pasture in Iowa, and now we're all row crop all the time. And that production scheme really optimizes conditions to lose nitrogen through the soil profile out to the tile systems and ultimately the stream network in the Gulf of Mexico.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Chris Jones, who's the author of The Swine Republic: Struggles with the Truth About Agriculture and Water Quality. One of the essays in the book also talks about how much livestock waste Iowa produces compared to human waste. This was fascinating. Long story short, your ballpark estimates of five species present in Iowa produce waste equivalent to millions upon millions of people. You can give the exact number, but why so much? How does that play into what we're seeing with water quality?
So yeah, we have 3 million people in Iowa, but actually the livestock generate the fecal waste of about 168 million people. And so a hog goes from, 0 to 280 pounds in 6 months. And so it's eating, a lot during that time. And so it excretes a lot of waste. And we have 25 million hogs. Each hog excretes a waste of about 3 to 4 people. And so just our hogs alone are excreting the waste of, say, 80 to 100 million people. We're also the top egg state. We have about 80 million laying chickens. We have 4 million beef cattle. We have 5 million turkeys. We have a good-sized dairy industry, 220,000 dairy cattle. And so all these animals are excreting waste. And, this has to be applied to fields. And in many areas of the state, the population of livestock simply is greater, or the manure excreted by the livestock is greater than what the crops can absorb, and thus we have polluted streams from the livestock manure.
Yeah, I was going to ask, most human waste either goes into a city sewer system if you live in an urban area, or a septic field or cavitet or whatever system people may have out in the country. What happens to all that animal poop?
Well, in the case of hogs, and that's our main livestock animal, the hogs live above a grate, and they excrete their waste. It falls down through the grate into a pit. The pit generally is designed to hold either 6 months or a year's worth of material, and then that's pumped out of the pit into a truck or a tanker of some sort, which is transported to the field, and then that liquid waste is injected into the field, usually injected, some of it's surface applied. That's usually done this time of year, say late October, November, or if it's dry enough, say March. And so that's applied to crops, that's right. And, it's not that manure is a bad fertilizer. I mean, organic farming, that's fertilization with manure, right? And so we don't want to say manure is a bad fertilizer. The problem is we just have so much of it. And so the way we raise hogs these days, where they're concentrated into these barns, the Iowa farmer, the average Iowa farmer that's raising hogs has 5,000 hogs now. 1980, that farmer had 200. And so it's made managing and handling this waste just really a colossal challenge.
Yeah, well, and that gets into some of the questions about individual farmers and corporate agriculture, and we can come back to that in a little bit. Your work, we've talked a lot about Iowa, and your work is understandably focused on Iowa. You were at the University of Iowa for a long time, but how do Illinois and the rest of the Midwest compare? Are we experiencing these same issues?
So, yes, the answer to that is yes. There is a lot of nutrient loss from Illinois and the other Corn Belt states, Minnesota, Indiana, Western Ohio. And, you know, what separates Iowa from Illinois? Well, you know, we have all the livestock. And so, of course, there is some livestock in Illinois, but not nearly as much as Iowa. And so much of our state is farmed. You know, that's what separates Iowa from so many other states. About 85% of our land in Iowa is committed to some form of agricultural production. And so we really don't have any natural areas that can buffer this pollution. And so the combined nutrient loss from all the Corn Belt states ultimately ends up in the Mississippi River. That travels down to the Gulf of Mexico. Those nutrients catalyze a big algae bloom in the Gulf of Mexico. When the algae die, they consume the nitrogen, or they, excuse me, they consume the oxygen in the water column in the Gulf, and that causes this dead zone off the coast of Louisiana, and so the fish and the shrimp and so forth can't live, and so that is degrades the commercial fishery down there.
How are farmers themselves affected by all of this? You talk in the book about one of the dilemmas that farmers find themselves in, for example, is, you know, they're left with a choice between personal interest in public interest. Can you talk more about that?
Well, you know, a lot of people, you know, want to say, well, I hate farmers, or I'm placing the blame on farmers. And the truth is that Corn Belt farmers are making many of the same decisions that most of us would make given similar circumstances. And so the problem isn't that farmers are evil. The problem is they're human beings. And so they make these decisions based in their own self-interest, like we all do. And so that is an issue. And when, as a result of that, we have the pollution. And so what we need is policy. We need different policies that are going to give us the environmental outcomes that we want, but also maintain prosperity in these rural areas around the Corn Belt.
Yeah, no, and I want to come back to some of those policy solutions, but I think it could be illuminating for people, again, who are not farm people necessarily, to understand, like, for example, you write about the insurance dilemma, right? Don't plant, risk being turned down, or plant, put a bunch of these chemicals in the ground, but you're more likely to get insurance if your crops fail. Can you talk about, you know, some of the economic incentives that are working, you know, influencing farmers to do things that may be ultimately not in the public interest?
Well, crop insurance is the main subsidy program that we have now, and so the taxpayer pays, on average, I think 50 to 60% of the cost of the crop insurance that the farmer purchases, and the farmer purchases the rest, and so that creates perversity in the system and causes us to grow corn and soybeans where we might otherwise not grow it, and in fact, we might not even choose to grow those crops. And if the farmer had to pay the full cost of the crop insurance, and that's especially true on the fringes of the Corn Belt, say North Dakota or Kentucky, those types of places. But nonetheless, you know, most farmers here in Iowa and Illinois, they do buy publicly subsidized crop insurance. The other big thing that causes perversity is a renewable fuel standard. And so in Iowa, over 60% or around 60% of our corn goes to produce fuel ethanol. Well, you know, that's an area of land the size of about 20 Iowa counties. We have 99 counties. And so 20% of our state is being used to grow corn for ethanol. And how smart is that when we know corn is probably our most polluting crop, no matter what a farmer does or how good a farmer is. And so why do we guarantee a market for corn to produce fuel that really has dubious environmental benefits? You know, we need more diversity of crops if we're going to get the water quality and the environmental outcomes that we want. And so, again, this renewable fuel standard creates perversity that also drives water pollution.
You know, just a couple of minutes left before we go to the break. We need to take a break, I should say. I wonder how your approach to talking and writing about all of this has changed over time, right? You once worked for the Iowa Soybean Association. Now you're writing a book that, you know, it's at least metaphorically barn burning, big agriculture. Talk about your own journey there.
Well, you know, when I worked at Soybean, you know, I saw some of the denial, I guess, from the industry about, you know, the sources of the problem and how big a problem it is. And so that definitely affected me and affected my writing. Excuse me. And so, you know, the more I learn about water quality and, you know, the human consequences of what's happened here in Iowa, yeah, I guess it has affected my writing and made it more pointed, yes.
Do you ever get negative pushback, negative
feedback?
Oh, yeah,
definitely. Yeah. I definitely do. And, you know, I retired at least in part because, you know, there were some guys in the legislature that didn't really like what I was writing and made some strong suggestions that, you know, the university should think twice about letting me write these things on the university domain.
Huh. Fascinating. Well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more with Chris Jones, who's the author of The Swine Republic, Struggles with the Truth About Agriculture and Water Quality. He's also got a Substack, which you can find at, I think it's riverraccoon.substack.com, and where he writes about some of these issues, not on the university's domain, but out in the public or the private sector, I should say. More with Chris Jones after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Chris Jones, a retired research engineer from the University of Iowa, the author of The Swine Republic, Struggles with the Truth About Agriculture and Water Quality. It's out now from Ice Cube Press. Jones is going to be part of an event this evening from the Prairie Rivers Network in Champaign. It's a launch of what that group is calling its Clean Water Forever campaign. That's going to be from 7 to 8:30 at the Orpheum in Champaign, if you're in the area. If you want to join our conversation, if you have a question or comment, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Chris, we've known about this problem and possible solutions for decades. At least in Iowa, you hear politicians talking loudly about the need for better water quality. And yet here we are with polluted wells all over the place. Why do you think that is? What's driving the opponents of doing what needs to be done?
Well, that's a good question. And I say all the time, we have some of our polluted water is blue and some of our polluted water is red, right? And so we've had a real reluctance from either party to really tackle this in a meaningful way. And, you know, at least Democrats sort of agree with the concept in the abstract, you know, that the water needs to be better and that we need to do something about it. But their efforts to address this legislatively are, in my opinion, feeble. And so I think one of the reasons why is, you know, the public perception of the American farmer is high. And we go out and we see when politicians run for office and they film their TV commercials, they're oftentimes out walking across the farmyard to some farmer, you know, wearing the Carhartts. And so politicians like to be seen next to farmers. They like to be seen as ag friendly. And so neither party has really really address this in a real meaningful way, in my estimation.
And so, to whom does it fall on to fix this? And we touched on this a little bit earlier. We often talk about this topic when we're talking about climate. Is this something that it's up to individuals to fix, or can individuals even fix it? Or is it a collective problem, business, government?
So the issue with nutrient pollution, which is our main problem, it's a colossal problem. This is a continental scale problem. And so we're polluting an ocean, you know, 2,000 miles away. And so that tells us the magnitude of the problem. If you try to look for examples of a problem of this magnitude that's been solved through individual actions, you can't find one. It's not out there. We're not going to solve this through individual actions. We need government to solve this, and we need laws. And so we know in this system of corn, soy, and CAFOs, where we really have very little diversity on our farms, we just, in my circle,
CAFOs, for listeners' sake, that's the confined area feeding operations, yeah, large concentrations of pigs. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
In my circle, we're just not going to get the environmental outcomes that we want, even if every farmer is doing things perfectly. And so we need policy that's going to give us the environmental outcomes that we want and deserve. And so we need more diversity on farms. Well, agribusiness especially does not want that. We have infrastructure aligned with the corn-soybean system, the ag retailers, the co-ops, the transportation system, the lock and dam system on the Mississippi River, the insurance industry, the equipment manufacturers, on and on and on. All of these are aligned with the corn-soy system. And so to have a more diverse system with more diverse crops, more diverse ways of raising animals requires recapitalization, and the industry really resists this. And so thus I say, until they're ready to take that step, we as taxpayers have a right to say how the system is operated. What they do affects everybody, and when what you do affects everybody, then everybody should have a say in what you do. And so that means regulations on what's happening on the farm scale.
What would that actually look like on individual farms, right? And can you do this in a way that keeps farmers afloat and able to adapt to the changes in regulation?
Well, most of my ideas are Iowa-centric, and so in Iowa, our number one thing is we cannot protect our riparian areas. And so the riparian area, that's the area along the stream banks. Farmers farm right up to the brink of the stream. We see pictures every summer of corn and soybeans falling into the stream from these farmed fields. And I say all the time, if we cannot protect the riparian areas, there truly is no hope. And so we need laws that will buffer the streams, say 50 feet on either side of perennial streams. No farming in the two-year floodplain. We have about 400,000 acres in Iowa that are cropped, that are in the two-year floodplain. Why are we doing this? It's crazy. It's perverse. And so that's one idea.
Just to explain that maybe further, for those of us who don't have a grip maybe as tightly on this as you do, mm-hmm. This is an area that is likely to flood every 2 years and wash whatever fertilizers and chemicals have been put down. Just goes right into the water.
Yeah, that's okay. Right. On average, it's going to flood every other year. And so all the inputs on those acres gone to the Gulf of Mexico every other year. That's right. secondly... So, yeah. We need to really ban the application of manure to snow and frozen ground. We see that quite a bit in Iowa, especially, say, the month of March. Iowa, it's not unusual to have snow on the ground March 1st. Well, our rules allow application of manure to snow and frozen ground after February 28th. We need to ban that. We need to really get farmers aligned with the recommended fertilization levels that Iowa State University recommends. And so we have the NRATE calculator, what it's called. Iowa State is part of that. I believe the University of Illinois is also part of that, and some other Corn Belt institutions. A farmer can go to that and put in the price of corn and put in the price of fertilizer, and it tells him what the recommended amount of nitrogen is for his corn crop. Well, we know that farmers in Iowa are probably, you know, 40 to 50 pounds above the recommended level for nitrogen. And part of the issue of that is manure. We're trying to dispose of manure. And in these areas where we have high density of livestock, we're still selling a lot of commercial fertilizer. The availability of manure doesn't really affect the sales of commercial fertilizer that much. And so we really need to get farmers aligned with the recommended nutrient amounts. That's another idea. As I said, we need to get rid of the renewable fuel standard. It's just dumb that we're using so much of the best farmland on earth to produce corn for fuel ethanol. And so the amount of calories that go into fuel ethanol in this country from corn exceed the caloric requirements of every person in the United States. You know, why are we doing this? It's just dumb to use the best farmland on earth to produce this fuel that, you know, is not really going to be around all that much longer. So those are three ideas.
Do you have to, I mean, this is getting maybe a little far afield, you know, Iowa certainly has a prominent place in our nation's politics. You've seen a lot of presidential candidates coming through there. I suppose it's not even that insightful or interesting to say how, you know, the reason we have the ethanol fuel situation we do is because of Iowa's place on the presidential election calendar.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, if you're a presidential candidate, you come to the state of Iowa, you've got to kneel at that altar, right? And it doesn't matter which party you're in. And so, you know, Ted Cruz probably would have won the Iowa caucuses in 2016 had, you know, he'd been pro-ethanol. And so you can make the case that, you know, maybe 2016 wouldn't have happened the way it did without this need to profess allegiance to ethanol. Again, this is bipartisan. You know, Tom Harkin, a longtime Democratic senator from Iowa, was one of the fathers of the ethanol industry. We see liberal senators, Amy Klobuchar, Minnesota, and Sherrod Brown in Ohio, both being very supportive of ethanol. And so, yes, this is truly bipartisan and one of the reasons why it's so entrenched.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Paul is calling from Urbana in line one. Paul, thanks for calling. How are you?
I will be short. What does the guest know about these nitrogen fertilizer stabilizers vis-a-vis the health of the soil? I understand they actually work by inhibiting microbe growth, which sounds like killing the soil to save the nitrogen. Is there any basis to that? And I've never heard anybody discuss it. I talked to somebody in agricultural industry who works with maximizing nitrogen use.
All right, Paul, yep. Thanks for the question. Go ahead.
So, yes, I do know about them, and they are intuitive, but there's really no evidence that use of these inhibitors improves water quality. And so at least some of them, yes, they are an antibiotic. And so when you apply the chemical with the fertilizer, it kills the organisms that would otherwise convert the ammonia to nitrate, and so it slows down that process. And so, yes, there is a biological component to using these things. These things are something that farmers can get cost share for in Iowa, which I just think is ridiculous. And, you know, it's just another way to funnel money from the taxpayer into the pockets of agribusiness.
Just a few minutes left in our time together. You say early on in the book that all of this, the fact that all this stuff is controversial still means that we lack the courage to confront our environmental problems. And you talk, as we did a little while ago, about the opposition to your own work over time. How do you reckon with that? How do you differentiate between honest dialogue and what you perceive as dishonest dialogue?
Well, I think there's a, you know, there's a huge ag media out there, and a lot of people in the general public may not realize this. There's a lot of ag media. There's a lot of ag advocacy organizations. I think in Iowa, there's about 19 of them that we call the ag family. And so they're constantly messaging things to the public that, you know, paint a picture that's different from what the reality is. And, you know, the reality is, as I have said, you know, only about 15% of our stream stretches meet all their designated uses under the Clean Water Act. We have all the issues with drinking water. We're the leading contributor to the dead zone. Our streams have been straightened. We have thousands of miles of streams that have been straightened to square up fields for farming. And so, you know, almost by any estimation, Iowa is just really an environmental disaster. But it's been that way for so long that people forget what it could and should be like. And so we need to have these discussions. You know, Iowa is not a state that's growing very fast, still only 3 million people. We see Illinois too, rural Illinois, as declining population. These are quality of life issues in terms of environment and water quality. And so I think we need to have these honest discussions and not be so hell-bent on putting the farmer on a pedestal and saying how great they're doing all the time.
Chris Jones, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Okay, thank you, Brian.
Chris Jones is the author of The Swine Republic, Struggles with the Truth About Agriculture and Water Quality. He's going to be giving a talk, or part of an event, I should say, tonight at the Orpheum in downtown Champaign. It's a launch event for the Prairie and Rivers Network, what they're calling their Clean Water Forever campaign. Again, that's from 7 to 8:30 this evening at the Orpheum in Champaign, Illinois, if you happen to be in the area or want to make the trip to Central Illinois. And that's all the time we have for our program today. We'd love to hear what you think about what we have been talking about, whether it's today or any topic in the recent past. You can let us know by leaving a voicemail at 217-300-2121, 217-300-2121. We'll be sharing some of your responses on air from time to time. You can find that number and our email address, every other way to contact us, on our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, find a link to subscribe to our podcast, or just look us up on Apple or Spotify. Search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.